We broken here. It's now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. As you know, she has 8 years tonight. Blythe. Let's give it up for Blythe.
Here we go. I'm back. My name is Blythe. I'm an alcoholic. I didn't think I would be nervous because I'm excited. It's such an important day to me, but I'm so nervous. So bear with me. I'm so happy to be here. I'm such a different person. Bill could not get me. When I was new, I could barely walk across the stage. The only motivation I had was to get that chip. And here they had monthly chips for 4 months, 5 months. So that's the only reason I would come on stage. I didn't want to read. Bill kept asking me to chair. I was like, I'm not ready. It took me about 5 years to be able to get up here because that meant I had to be vulnerable and I had to tell the truth and I had to share my experience. And that was really hard for me. It was hard for me to be transparent. I wanted to keep everything just close to me, you know, so I couldn't get hurt. And that was just a survival skill that I had learned. You know, you don't trust, you don't share, you know, you don't, then you can't get hurt. So, 8 years today, I can't even believe it. I don't even know. It's been fast and it's also been short at times. Today, I had the privilege of going to lunch. My dad took me to lunch today, and that is a really big deal because when I came into the program, I didn't have a relationship with my dad. He was in my life, but we literally could not speak 5 minutes to each other without just irritating the crap out of each other. And we were so similar. We didn't know how to communicate. So I came in, and I remember it was Father's Day, and I used to go to the Sunday Serenity Seekers meeting, and there's a lot of older men that I looked up to, and I said, I can't believe it's Father's Day, and my dad, you know, he's not even in town. He doesn't want to spend Father's Day with me. And they said, well, what does Father's Day mean? I'm like, it's the day that he celebrates that I made him a father. And they said, no, Father's Day is about him and what he wants to do on his day. And I was so self-centered, you know, because it was always all about me. I was thinking, like, I'm trying to start this relationship. Why I'm finally participating? Why isn't he wanting to be involved? And it's like, how many times did I not call on his birthday? How many times was I not involved? I was not participating in that relationship. How do I expect somebody to all of a sudden, oh, you're sober? Great. You know, let's have this relationship. So it's really been amazing that 8 years has really restored that. And he's one of my best friends in my life today. And ironically, we were at lunch and I saw my cousin and his wife and their children. And this last year, it's been a blessing that they've gotten to become in my life as well. So my point is that, you know, by sticking around, relationships change and people change, and things can look different than they do today. You know, when you come in, you kind of feel like everything, for me, I felt like everybody was out to get me. Nobody really cared. And now I have a family that I, you know, that's better than I could ever dream. I'm looking out in the crowd and there's so many people here that I share certain moments with. And these are the people in sobriety that show up when it matters. You know, this is my family that I've been able to create today. Sisters and mothers and fathers and grandfathers and grandmothers. I've been able to recreate that here, and it feels amazing. This year was, I'm just going to talk about this really quick so I don't start crying later. I lost my grandfather 5 months ago, and it was the hardest thing that I've had to go through in sobriety so far. But it was also the most beautiful moment that I've been able to go through, because from the moment that he got sick, I was in contact with my friends, my family, just, you know, had support and arms just around me the entire time. And I made sure to remember what other people had said when they got up and shared and how they got through situations like that. And the time came, he was passing away in Cahuilla Delta, and we got the phone call the morning of, and I showed up, and the whole family was able to come to the room, and he wasn't responding. And I remember Rayanne had said one of the most important things that she did was she got in, you know, got to hold her mother's hand and got to lay with her in bed while she was passing away. And at the time I was like, whoa, that's when I heard Rayanne say, that's not going to be me. I'm not going to be able to be strong enough to do that. And you know what? I got to hold his hand. And he had a tear, you know, I was telling him I loved him, and there was a tear rolling down his face. And that, I was just sitting thinking that only happened because I'm sober. That moment could only be special because I'm sober, because in the past I would have wanted to drink or use or escape. I was not going to be in the hospital room. I was going to be as far away as possible, and I was not going to deal with these feelings, and I was not going to be a part of my family. They can deal with it on their own, and I got to be in the middle of it, and it was beautiful, and I was asked to do a eulogy. I would not have been doing a eulogy if I was drinking. They didn't want me anywhere near that, so the fact that I've had to walk through that and a lot of other really deep situations this year, I think, makes my birthday so much more. I did it. You know, I went through things that I never thought I could go through sober, and I stayed sober. You know, alcohol just wasn't a solution for me anymore. It doesn't solve my problems, and it feels kind of like when you get through that fire, it's a lot more beautiful on the other side. So, that's where I'm at now, but I'll go back to tell you a little bit about my drinking days. I started drinking. I grew up here in Visalia, went to high school here. My family's here, and the moment I found alcohol, I felt alive. I could not get enough. It was 0 to 100 from day one. It was binge drinking. I loved the effect that alcohol produced. It was more, 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 more. And I was also a garbage pail kid, so whatever you were offering, I was going to take. And did that through high school. And I grew up as an only child, and it was really, really lonely. And I hated it, and I just couldn't wait to be in the middle of a party. I couldn't wait. When I found alcohol, that was my escape. And I knew that, you know, if I got good grades and I kept this one persona going, then I can go and drink and party and they won't pay attention to me. So I made sure that I got good grades and then I could go and do whatever I wanted to do. So I pretty much started my drinking career really early on. So I was in college. I wasn't in college. I'm still in high school. I used to drink every night. So I got really good grades, and I was like, okay, I'm getting out of this little crappy Visalia town, and I'm going to get into a school, and I'm never coming back, because I just felt like this is where all the negative things were happening. I just wanted to escape. So I got into a school in Southern California, and I was like, I'm leaving Visalia, and I'm never coming home. And I got down to Southern California, and I was living in the dorms, and I was like, yes, I cannot wait. I found a bunch of people day one who drank just like me, and being a freshman in the dorms, I was a female, and I started taking diet pills, and it was Xenadrin, so it was the ephedrine. It was pretty much like legal speed at that time. So I'm partying, I'm loving life, and I'm just taking a bunch of pills, and I'm getting sicker and sicker every day. And I could barely, it's really the only reason I graduated or college is pretty much drinking my way through it. I was a drunk that was just, I didn't know what was going to happen. It was crazy, and it was, I was, I'll tell this story, my sponsor loves this one. When I was 18, we used to always go to Las Vegas because you could drink on the strip. We'd go there for New Year's, and once I started drinking, I couldn't stop. I didn't know what was going to happen. It was like Russian roulette. And so we start drinking, and we have a college friend named Drunk Dave, and we think it'd be fun for me and Drunk Dave to get married. So we get all dressed up, and we go in taxis to the Little White Chapel, one of the chapels in Las Vegas Boulevard, and I'm getting ready. My friends are like, you don't want to get married to Drunk Dave. Like, we don't know his last name. Please don't get married. And I was like, no, it's fine. I'll just get annulled. You know, we're just going to get it annulled. Like, showed you what I thought about marriage at that time. Was like, not a big deal. So we get out of the car, and I was like, oh, I think I had a moment of clarity. You know, my friends were like pretty much dragging me, like, don't do this. This isn't funny anymore. Like, this is getting to the point of seriousness. So I was like, fine, okay. So I stopped, and I was like, okay, we need to, I'm not going to marry Drunk Dave tonight, but we'll see about tomorrow. You know, if I'm still interested tomorrow, maybe I'll marry Drunk Dave. But, so we went back to college, and Drunk Dave and we never really, you know, crossed paths that much anymore after that. It was just a little awkward. But I was doing stuff like that all the time. I had this group of friends, and they were also probably alcoholics as well. And me and my best friend Jessica, between the two of us, we had been kicked out of almost every little bar. We were living in Newport Beach, and there's a little community of like four or five blocks called the War Zone, and it was a bunch of college kids, and we crammed like five people in a duplex. There'd be five people on the bottom, five people on the top. It was crazy. Parties all the time, kegs on the roof. It was a great recipe for an alcoholic. I never knew what was going to happen. We'd show up at a bar, one of us would get kicked out, and it's really hard for girls to get kicked out of bars. Like, you have to be pretty crazy, because usually they want girls coming into the bars. So I had a wig that I would use, and it was a blonde wig, and any time I got kicked out of bar, I would go home and put on this wig, and this was my alias. And then I would come back, and it was like it never happened. So I was constantly learning, like, manipulation to try to, you know, I'm going to get in, and I'm going to drink, and that's just all there is to it. So my drinking, I started getting really dangerous. At one point, I'm at a bar by myself, and I decide that it's a good idea to go to Mexico. You know, I go with people that I meet just at the bar and go tell my friends, my roommates, like, I'm leaving, I'm packing my bag, I'm going to go party in Mexico for the night. And they're like, this is not okay thinking. What are you doing? And I'm like, well, I was living life so recklessly at one point that I didn't try to commit suicide, but I didn't care if something happened to me. You know, I didn't care, and I was cycling through a ton of different substances. Alcohol was always my main, but it was like, if it wasn't one thing, then it was the next, and then it was the next, and it was like anything to get me out of myself. I was so miserable when I was sober, and I was so sad, and I hated myself so much that I never wanted to be, you know, I'd come to and I'd be like, where's a handful of whatever, and let's just go back to oblivion. And I thought that therapy was, you know, my issue. So I started seeing a therapist down there. Her name was Marie, and she was my angel. She kind of saved me because she started working the steps on me, and I didn't even know what she was doing. She started being like, well, you know, what happened last night? And I tell her, she's like, well, what was your part? I'm like, what do you mean? I don't know what that, I don't understand what that is. Like, what? In Alcoholics Anonymous, you start working the steps, you start learning, like, we have a part in a situation when we're in conflict with something. Usually we have done something, initiated to cause this conflict. So she started working the steps on me. She told me about an AA meeting, and I went, but it was at somebody's house, and it was like the 12 and 12, and it was really awkward, and I kind of just went in, and I thought that that's what AA was, and I just wasn't about, I didn't want to sit on someone's couch and read a book that I didn't know, I couldn't understand, so I didn't go back. So I'm going, so around now it's like 2010, and I'm going to be in a wedding in Chicago, and we are going to be at a bachelorette party in Las Vegas. And my therapist, she said, how about, she was kind of like a sponsor at the time. She's like, how about you call me when you get to Las Vegas? Because we thought it would be a good idea for me to try and not drink at this bachelorette party. I don't know why she thought I would be able to do that, but we thought we were going to try it. And within 5 minutes of me getting to that bachelorette party, I had a champagne glass in my hand. I was drinking. And what was kind of cool about that is, I was walking by this group of men who weren't drinking at all. They were drinking water. And I went up to one of them and I said, and I noticed that, you know, how are you not drinking? You're in Las Vegas. And they said, well, we're friends with Bill W. And I was like, who? Who's Bill? Like, now I know Bill W. is the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous. But at the time, I didn't know who Bill was. And they said, do you have a problem with drinking? And I said, I don't think I have a problem with drinking, but everybody in my life thinks I have a problem with drinking. And they said, well, you know, here's our number. If you want to go to a meeting, here's a meeting, you know, here's a way to get to, you know, a meeting in Las Vegas if you want one. And my friends were like, oh, why are you talking to those guys? They're boring. They're not drinking. You know, she just thought it was weird. But I thought it's interesting that I think I knew I had a problem, and I wanted to do something about it. I just wasn't ready to do something about it yet. But it was intrigued how I couldn't. I was just floored that someone could be in Las Vegas and not drink. How is that even possible? Well, I mean, standing here today, I've been to Las Vegas 3 or 4 times, and I've not drank, and it's really fun. You know, you don't lose as much money, and you get to actually go to shows. You get to go to shows. I mean, I don't sit at the table gambling all my money away. It's a lot of fun, and it's possible to be in Las Vegas and not want to drink. It is possible. You will get there. That's something you like to do. So I end up, I can't get it together. I'm just totally, I'm unemployed. I'm going from job to job. I have this habit of whenever I'm disturbed at a job, this is in the past when I was drinking, I decided that if they did something to piss me off, I was going to walk in and tell them exactly what I thought about them. So my first company I worked for, I thought they were making too much money and had too many Louis Vuitton purses. So I went in and said, I don't want to work for you anymore. I don't think you're paying us enough. You have too many purses, and I'm done. I mean, how rude. That is just so, like, I can't even believe my mentality. It's the ego. The egomaniac is out of control. My next job, I'm a horrible employee. I'm getting sick every morning. Alcohol is just like dry heaving, or I'm drinking in the bathroom, and I'm the same situation. I don't care. I'm showing up late. I have no respect for them. And now I'm learning, today I've learned concepts of, you know, if you show up work too late, you are stealing from your employee. They're paying you to be there from a certain time, whether it's 8 to 5, 11 to whatever. If you get there late, I thought, what, I'll just make up the time in the middle of the day. I work harder than half these people. And that's not the point. The point is you get there at 8, you leave at 5, and you don't steal from your employer. Time is still stealing. I thought stealing was physically taking money or objects, but stealing time can also be stealing. So at that time, I get let go from my job. I'm unemployed, which I was super excited for because it was World Cup time, which I don't even watch soccer, but I was glad that I got to be paid to go to the bar at 6 in the morning and drink. I was super excited. So it's, you know, I'm getting up in the morning, getting ready for work, but not going to work. I'm going to the bar, and I'm just hanging out. So this is my life. You know, I'm on unemployment, I'm drinking, and finally my family up in Visalia was like, are you done yet? Are you ready to come home? My grandpa was really sick. My parents were getting separated. My mom was, they were going to lose the house. It was like, okay, I will come back because you guys need me to be here in Visalia. I'll come save everything, you know, and I'll come. This was supposed to be a layover stop. I was not supposed to stay in Visalia, so I come back to Visalia, and I decided I need to go to another therapist because that's the only thing that I have no problems about talking about therapy. I love therapy. If you need to work on outside issues, I've always thought that that was my issue, not drinking. I had several therapists being like, you need to cut out the alcohol and the drugs. That's what is keeping you. You might not have to go to as much therapy if you stop using, which makes you do things to want to be in therapy. So I go see a therapist, and she's like, I agree. You need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't agree. I'm on a second opinion. So I go to another therapist. And that therapist, she was very connected to people in the program. And so she said, here's a meeting list. I've called someone. I don't want you to come back until you go to a meeting. I was like, geez, like, this is really harsh that therapist is ordering me to go to AA. So I go to an AA meeting. It's Sunday Serenity Seekers at Quia Delta, and I hear, you know, if you think you could do some cold controlled drinking, go to the nearest bar room. So I did that. I went to San Francisco. I tried some controlled drinking, and it was the same story. You know, I tell my friends, I'm not going to drink. Please help support me. 5 minutes into it, I'm telling them to forget what I just said and to support me in my drinking. So I'm drinking all night long. They go to bed. I'm drinking by myself. It's not even fun to drink by yourself anymore. You know, it's just, I could physically not stop drinking. I couldn't, it's like I had to physically finish it. It was this compulsion. It's like what they talk about in the book. It's an obsession, and it's an allergy. Our body, once we put that chemical into our body, it starts craving more. And mine had done that from day one. You know, day one, my body craved more, more, more. So I wake up in the morning, and I have makeup streaming down my face. I'm looking in the mirror. I'm like, I feel like God just says, when are you going to stop doing this to yourself? And I get in the car, and I drive back to Visalia, and I pull over because I'm crying half the time because I think the alcohol might be my issue. Maybe. So now I'm a little bit closer, you know. So alcohol might be my issue. So I come back, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to try it again. I'm going to go to a women's meeting. So I went to a Saturday morning women's meeting, and I sat next to who's now my sponsor. But and at the time, it was a big. I love roasting my sponsor when I'm up here. So I sit next. I end up sitting next to her, and she's got her book out, and she's like, whoa, we're on this page, and she's showing me, like, where we're at, and just, like, taking care of me from a minute of, like, making sure the newcomer knows exactly, you know, feels comfortable. And so I get the phone list, and I look at the sobriety time, and she has one of the most sobriety times in that meeting. So I said, oh, are you Catherine? She said, yeah, that's me. I said, well, can you go to coffee with me and just tell me about, I don't know what AA is. I keep being referred to it, but I don't want to do it. I don't want to be sober. But can you just, it's informational purposes. So she meets me, and something told me the moment I met her, you need to be honest. You need, if you want to get help and you want to be better, you need to be honest. So I thought, okay, I'll just try. I'll try to be honest. I mean, I wasn't even able to be honest with myself. So I told her, you know, this is what I'm struggling with, and I don't know if I can stay sober. And she started crying, we started crying, and she said, that's why God brought you to me. And she gave me a hug, and she said, we're exactly where you're supposed to be. And from then, she took me to different meetings. I went to the Monday night meeting, which is my home group. It's a book study meeting at Christ Lutheran Church. And I met her friend Lindsay. You know, Lindsay secretaried the meeting. And I just fell right into the fellowship. I found a group of girls and a group, you know, of young people that I really mixed with. And I was, I didn't think it was what I wanted, but in fact, I was devastated that alcohol was my problem. I did not want alcohol to be, I didn't want anything else to be wrong with me than alcohol. But I, you know, stopped drinking day to day and things started getting a little bit better. My first year in sobriety was really difficult. You know, I knew that my life was unmanageable. That was clear. But I didn't know that it was because of alcohol. And once I removed it, I started seeing things get a little bit better. And then as I started working the steps, I got to step two with my sponsor. And at that time, my grandpa was hospitalized. And I remember her saying, you know, just wake up in the morning and have coffee with God. And because I didn't know how to find a higher power. I was agnostic. I believed that there was a higher power. I didn't know how to connect to him because I thought it was this blanket God. I thought it was this God that, why would he want to take care of me? I'm this girl struggling with alcohol abuse. There's people starving. Why does he want to help me get sober? And I had to learn that this is my God. I got to make a list of all what I wanted my God to look like. My God was kind and loving and forgiving, and he was there for me unconditionally. And she said, well, you know, you can borrow my God. You know, if you don't have a God, then borrow mine. So I remember sitting in the hospital room with my grandpa, and I was like, okay, I'm really sad, I'm really upset, I don't know what to do, but I'm just going to try praying. And I prayed, and I felt this peace over me. And I thought, well, you know, that... And I learned that I couldn't pray, like, I can't pray to make him better. I need to pray God's will. God's will, not mine, be done. If he's supposed to pass at that time, then that's what God's will is, and I'll have to learn to be okay with it. But he's not Santa Claus God. I can't ask him, you know, for all my wish lists. It's just, he's just, you put it in his hands and he's already decided what's going to happen. So I'm working step two, trying to find my connection with a higher power, and then it's learning to turn it over to a higher power. So learning step three was really, you know, the two and three were really difficult for me. But once I started getting the hang of it, it's like, okay, I'm not in control. I'm not in charge. Somebody else is in control. And I need to just give it to him and not worry about it. And then I start on step four and start trying to make my amends. And it was a really freeing process. It was really difficult. You know, and it's something that you don't really want to do, but once you find making those amends or doing your fourth step and then later having to make those amends, the fourth step is really a difficult time, but it's one of the most rewarding times. Earlier in sobriety, there's a lot of things I went through early on in sobriety that, you know, if I could stay sober through it, anybody could stay sober. I was at 6 months sober. My friend Kelly died from alcoholism. She had cirrhosis of the liver, and so I was sitting in a funeral at 6 months sober. And I didn't know that you could die from alcoholism. I knew you could die from drug overdoses, but I didn't know that alcoholism was something that someone so young, she was only 38 years old, and she died from that, she could not compulsively stop drinking. So that was a God shot for me. God pretty much said, you're going to keep your butt in this chair and you're not going to lose it. And you just keep listening to what these people have to say and keep coming back. So, I don't know. I feel like I'm all over the place. This is a horrible share tonight. I'm just going to be honest. This is not good.
You're great. Love you.
That's not. It's okay. I don't really know. This 8 years has been crazy. I've done the steps multiple times. You don't just do the steps once. You know, the one thing that I've done perfectly is I'm always working on something. You know, I went through the steps once. I went through the traditions. Then you pick up the book. I'm doing Drop the Rock right now, which is step 6 and 7. Meditation books. Just like jump into the program as much as possible. Literally, just go through the motions. If you don't feel like going to a meeting, just go to a meeting. Just go sit in the chair and listen, you know, to what the person has to say. Maybe they'll say one thing that you identify with. Get a sponsor. Sponsorship is so important. That helps you with accountability. If I didn't have a sponsor, I would not be standing here today. If I had someone that, you know, just a bunch of friends, I would have slipped out the back door and never come back. I made friends. Making friends and connecting with people is really important. You need to make your crew, you know, your road dogs. Those are the people that you talk to and you go, you know, jump in a car, go to meetings, go out of town, go to a different event. Those are the people that are going to save your ass. You know, you've got your sponsor and your sponsor is going to help you with your steps, but you need a fellowship and you need friends. Another suggestion is take suggestions. I would suggest you take suggestions. There's been plenty of times where I've been like, I don't want to do that. I think that is really crappy. And, you know, people said, I suggest that you try that. And so my willingness, you know, that's one thing I've been, you know, you have to be willing. And sometimes you have to be willing to do something in this program. Just be open-minded. Don't be so closed off. And I used to be so black or white. Why am I going to do that? It doesn't work. Well, how do you know it doesn't work? It didn't work in the past. Maybe it'll work for you today. Maybe if you insert God in there, then it'll help open the doors and it'll work. So, you know, take suggestions. Whenever I hear people go through situations, I kind of tuck it away and use it later, you know, like I did with Ryan and her mom passing, or I've been in numerous weddings, in sobriety, and I loved weddings. I love drinking excessively at weddings, and I can get through any kind of wedding. I can tell you how to get through a wedding sober. I've been through like 7 of them. So I just would tuck things away, but I don't know. This is a crazy journey, and I hope that you have heard something tonight that you at least identify with. It's been honest, and there's meet people. If you don't know anyone, go give your phone number to somebody. Shake someone's hand. Don't leave here without connecting with one person. And, you know, just keep coming back and go to meetings even when you don't feel like it. And that's it.